This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
We are back. Welcome along to the Fun Kids Science Weekly. It's Dan, and if you're one of those curious types, right, who is fascinated by all the amazingness in the universe and all the questions that it makes you ask every day when you see brilliant stuff, this is the show for you. We try and get the answers every week. Now, today we're learning why climates change and if there's anything we can do to kind of help or maybe even stop the process. Also, we'll find out why the core of the Earth is pulling us towards its centre right now. And on this week's Dangerous Dan, we're learning about one of the most deadly spiders in the world. First, let's start with a brand new series on the Science Weekly as we join two lads, Harry and Terry, who accidentally become space cadets.
Welcome along to the astro adventures of the Space Cadets.
T-minus 3, 2, 1. Mission Control, we have blastoff. Spaceship Intrigue is in flight.
Ah! Harry, what's going on?
I don't know, Terry. I know you said these hot dogs were out of this world, but this is ridiculous.
Oh, wow. I think we're in space.
What? We can't be. We're playing footy down the park at 3:30.
Welcome aboard the Spaceship Intrigue, Space Cadets.
What? Ah, where are we?
Who said that?
I am Zingy, your onboard autopilot, navigator and coffee machine.
Dude, I think we're actually on board a spaceship.
Correct. We're currently travelling at 21,257 miles per hour and should reach zero gravity in 3, 2, 1.
Dude, I think I'm going to hurl. Oh, ew. Space bomb. Astro spew. Ew.
Look, it's floating. Blobs.
Oh, floating space spew's the worst.
Indeed. Now, boys, please settle down.
But why is it floating? Ew!
In outer space, the force of gravity does not appear as strong as it does on Earth. The planet's gravity is what keeps everything on the ground. Bodies, such as you, and even your spew, are attracted to things with large mass, such as the Earth. Without gravity, everything and everyone on Earth would just float away. The further away from Earth you get, the less this force of gravity acts upon these bodies. So, in outer space, like this, you, your spew, anything really, can feel weightless.
If that's true, I should be able to open my bag of Monster Munch and... Oh, wow! They're floating! Oi, come back here! I'm floating!
Hey, man, watch out! Stop chasing crisps again!
Whee! Gotcha.
You two don't seem like the usual space cadets we have here on these research missions.
Why, thank you.
That wasn't a compliment. Why exactly did you two sign up to be space cadets?
We didn't. I don't think we should be here, really.
I thought we were only queuing up to get Harry a hot dog.
No onions, please.
But, we must have gotten the wrong queue, and before you could say tomato ketchup, we found ourselves here. Harry never even got his hot dog.
No onions, please.
Thought it was a bit strange, filling in all that paperwork and having a medical just to get lunch.
Oh dear, Mission Control will not be pleased. But I'm afraid our course has been set. There's no turning back now. So mistake or not, you two...
Terry.
And...
Harry.
...are Mission Control's newest space cadets. Welcome aboard the Spaceship Intrigue for a voyage of research and discovery.
Ooh, do we get to miss school?
Well, we can't go back.
High five.
But remember, you're supposed to be exploring space and reporting back what you find out to Mission Control. You can start with gravity.
Good idea. So it's Earth's gravity that keeps my remote control car on the ground, which is why in space it's not working.
Yes, exactly. Earth's gravity also acts on the moon, keeping it in orbit, circling the Earth.
Ooh, Harry, write that down.
Ah, me pen's floated off.
So if the Earth's gravity keeps the moon in orbit, that must mean the sun's gravity is what keeps the Earth in orbit around the sun. You getting this down, Harry?
Nah, me notebook's floated off now.
Right, so the Earth's gravity keeps the moon orbiting Earth, and the sun's gravity keeps the Earth and the other planets orbiting around the sun.
Yes, that's right. Excellent. I'll fire these notes off to Mission Control right away.
And who's this little fella? Hello, boy.
This is RoboWoof, Intrigue's very own space dog.
Awesome. This is wicked. We've got a space pet. Oi, steady on. He's finishing me crisps here.
Good boy.
I may have my work cut out with you lot. No, Harry, please, not another bag of crisps.
Oh, Sorry.
Oh, right. I'm reporting back to Mission Control. Everyone is present and, correct? Setting course for Mars.
Where?
Mars, the planet closest to Earth. It's where our next mission is.
Cool.
Yeah.
Woo!
Mars. Would anybody like a Mars bar to celebrate?
No.
Join us next time for more Astro Adventures with the Space Cadets.
The first of our Space Cadet series on Fun Kids, and if you want to listen to more of their adventures, you can catch up for free on the Fun Kids app on iTunes and over at funkidslive.com. In a sec, we'll chat to someone from the Eden Project about a flower they've got there right now. Not just any flower, though, no. It's the biggest and the smelliest flower in the whole wide world, and it's just about to bloom, and when it does, it seriously reeks. So we'll find out more about that in a little bit. Hello, by the way, to Oscar, who is 8. He's been onto the iTunes podcast store and left a lovely little review of the show. He's telling us exactly how much he loves listening. It's brilliant. Thank you so much for that, Oscar. If you want a shout out, by the way, on this show, and you want to let everybody else know that you are one of the smart, special, and really curious people that are tuned in, it's the best way. Get out your phone or your tablet. Open up the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kid Science Weekly and leave us a review, give us some stars, write your name in there too. Next week, I might say hello to you. It's the Fun Kid Science Weekly. Now, the world's largest and smelliest flowering structure has just bloomed at the Eden Project. It's called a corpse flower. And we've got Nathan on the phone from the Eden Project to tell us more about it. Hey, Nathan.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. So, yeah, go on, the floor is yours. Tell us about the corpse flower.
Okay, the corpse flower is definitely the stinkiest flower I've ever come across, and it's not a nice smell. It attracts its pollinators, which are flies, by smelling like half-dead rat, half-rotten fish. Not nice. It does this to lure in flies, which will then take its pollen from one flower to another, allowing the plant to reproduce, make fruit, and the whole story can begin again.
Because it's just bloomed, it must be quite a big deal then. So how often does it tend to do this?
Okay, well, if we start the story from a seed, when the seed grows, it will grow into, in the first year of its life, it will only produce leaves. It will do that for about 12 months or so, to 18 months. Then it will wither away to nothing and go to sleep. It will become dormant. Then it will, after going to sleep for a little while, a bit like our bulbs in this country do in the winter, it will start to grow again and it will produce leaves again, but this time a bit bigger than before. It will carry on doing this cycle again and again for anything between 9 and 12 years. And by that stage, it could be 4 meters tall.
So how big is it now?
At the moment, we've got a few of them, you see, but the one that's coming into bud at the moment is about coming up to a meter tall, but it can grow very quickly, anything up to 15 centimeters per day.
Why is it so successful, though, as a plant? Surely this goes against all the laws of survival and evolution, really. It has to wait so long to bloom, and when it does, it absolutely reeks. Why doesn't it do the reverse of that, and why doesn't it do it often and smell really nice?
Well, often the exact answer will remain a mystery to us, but our best guess for this one is that it's chosen to just go for one massive flowering opportunity, and it doesn't just smell awful; it makes that smell travel further than almost any other plant. And the way it can do that is to raise its own temperature up to our body temperature. And for a plant, that's very unusual. This process we call being thermogenic. It makes heat the same way that we do. We're warm-blooded animals. For one night and one night only, it becomes a warm, fat plant. And it steams, visibly steams, and you can see the smell coming off as hot, stinky vapor, which will then travel up through the treetops at night in the rainforest of Sumatra, drifting on the breeze, and at night also in that part of the world, there will be flying bugs smelling the air, looking for somewhere to lay eggs.
I love the fact that it's evolved to become this. I love that. Yeah, we would think that the nice looking, beautiful, wonderfully smelling plants would be the ones that go furthest. But this just blows my mind. You say it's from Sumatra. Is that the only place that we can find it?
Naturally, yes. It's in Indonesia. You'll find it in Sumatra, still in the wild. But many botanical gardens, anywhere that's got a big hothouse, they tend to have them now because they are just such a spectacle and quite literally create a stink.
And what does it tend to look like?
It looks like a gigantic lily. The name Titan arum means giant lily. But it looks like something from Doctor Who. It looks quite an incredible out-of-this-world plant. The flowering structure or the bloom can be anything up to 3 meters tall and maybe 1.5 meters wide. But it is, it looks, and only lasts for 2 nights.
For 2 nights? Do you guys... Do you guys that work down at the Eden Project, during those 2 nights, do you try and find a way to make it smell nice around there to help you out, or do you just leave it be and you have to be well prepared for a stink?
We have to be well prepared for a stink, and believe it or not, people will travel many, many miles in the hope of seeing one and smelling one in bloom. We quite often will put a webcam on one, and then people can watch its progress. As I say, it grows very quickly, and you're never quite sure which night it's going to open, and it's always a night-scented lily. So it tends to open mid-afternoon, and by about 6 or 7 o'clock at night, it will be fully open and steaming away.
Right, final question, Nathan. You've got three options. You can only pick one of them. Mouldy old socks that you found under your bed that have been there rotting with a sandwich inside them for about 3 years. A dead rat who's been lying open with its guts spilling everywhere for about 5 days. Or the corpse flower. What smells worse?
The corpse flower, every time.
Perfect. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Nathan, from the Eden Project, for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Time for today's Dangerous Dan, where we look at the most mean and deadly things in the whole universe. This week, once again, we're headed back to Australia. I doubt the government, the travel office people at Australia really like this show. I'm always giving you reasons not to go by talking about the dangerous things that live there. This week, it is the funnel web spider, which is one of the most deadly spiders in the world. Now, it's thick, it's jet black. They're not as big or as hairy as tarantulas, though, but it does look like a spider that's been to the gym too much. Had too much protein, it's beefy, it's butch, and they're aggressive. They don't just sit around and wait, maybe only attacking when they're provoked. No, no, no. They go for it. They rush out, they attack people, and their attack stance as well. It's standing on their back few legs, lifting their front two high into the air with their claws ready to strike. And they've got two huge fangs at the front. And they're toxic as well. Their venom has the power to kill a human in just 15 minutes. Now, the thing is, the bad thing for the funnel web spider is their bites, the toxic, don't really have the power to kill other creatures, smaller ones that they could actually eat as food, because they can't fit a whole human in their mouth. Other creatures just kind of get on with the poison and they cure themselves of the toxic, whereas humans, we can't cope with the funnel web spider bite and we need to rush to hospital quickly or it's all over. Right, we'll get one of your brilliant questions that you've sent into the Fun Kids website answered by our science expert in a little bit. First, we're catching up with our intrepid explorer, Marina Ventura, who's teaching us about the climate.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too, over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So, I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go! Earth is very old. 4.5 billion years old, in fact. It can be really hard to get your head around such a big number, especially as humans have only been around for a tiny amount of that time. That said, I bet you know a bit about how life on Earth has changed. Here's a clue. You know about dinosaurs, right? Luckily, we don't need to worry about them anymore. Well, just as types of life on Earth have changed over time, so has the global climate. Come on, let's find out what's behind those changes.
You've already hit on one thing behind changes, Marina. Types of life can affect the climate. When the Earth was very young, even though there wasn't as much heat coming from the sun, the planet was very hot and gassy. And that's because there weren't any plants to absorb these gases. These gases acted a bit like a blanket and stopped the heat escaping, so air temperatures went up. As life on Earth developed, plants evolved and grew in number. As they were able to absorb gases like carbon dioxide, they helped reduce the blanket effect and cooled temperatures down. And temperatures cooled down. For the last few million years, the sun has been causing climates to change. Stars like the sun get hotter as they age, and today the Earth gets more heat from the sun than it did when life was starting to develop on our planet. And the sun itself is always changing. Giant dark spots called sunspots are always moving across its surface, causing the sun to give off slightly more energy, which makes the Earth a bit warmer.
So what else makes climates naturally change?
Well, something else that comes in cycles is all to do with the Earth's orbit, the way it moves around the sun. The shape of the orbit changes gradually from a circle to more of an oval in a cycle that lasts about 100,000 years. This makes the Earth move further away from the sun at times, so less of the sun's energy reaches the planet. The Earth also tilts as it orbits, and that tilt can be bigger at some times than others. This means that parts of the Earth become closer to the sun, and so hotter in summer, and others are further away, and so colder in winter.
So naturally, there will be cycles of different climates as the Earth's orbit changes, and as the energy the planet gets from the sun varies, as well as what kind of plants and animals are living. These are all reasons why the climate has naturally changed, and will continue to do so.
But don't forget, there are things which can affect climates which aren't related to our orbit of the sun. Remember the dinosaurs!
Good point, Mappy. You'll probably know that scientists believe the dinosaurs died out because a giant meteorite crashed into the Earth. The meteorite caused a dust cloud which blocked out the sun, causing temperatures to drop. Many living things on Earth died. Something similar happens when volcanoes erupt. Clouds of ash can fill the skies, sometimes for many years, blocking out sunlight and causing global temperatures to drop. Scientists have noticed that in the last 100 years or so, the climate has changed in other, unexpected ways. Whilst we are in the middle of a naturally warmer part of the cycle, temperatures have risen much more quickly than they have before. This is because of the effect that humans have on the environment, and it's something we'll be finding out more about.
That's right. All with the help of some real-life climate explorers. Come on, Marina. Load me up.
Good job, Mappy. See you soon, everyone.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
There are loads more Marina Ventura's adventures and episodes that you can catch up on for free on the Fun Kids app, on iTunes, and over at funkidslive.com. It is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, have you ever wondered why the sky is blue? And then why it goes particularly black, dark and murky when there's a storm a-brewing? Or have you ever wondered why some animals can breathe underwater and some can't? I mean, I wonder that one often. Usually I wonder it when I've tried to breathe underwater myself and then I come back up and cough half the ocean up. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is if you have any science question at all, you need to let us know. It doesn't matter how silly it might seem, right? Because every week we get our science expert on the show. And if you send in your question to funkidslive.com, click on my page, we might get Tom to answer it. Today's question is from Orla, who is 10, who's asking something deep-rooted that I've always wanted to know the answer of. Why does the core of the Earth drag us down? And then if you reach the core, would you die?
Well, the core of the Earth drags us down because of gravity. So the core of the Earth is the centre of mass of the Earth, so the central point of the Earth. So that's why we go towards the core. Now, why gravity works? Well, Newton said that gravity works because it has mass, and mass is attracted to each other. So when you have a large mass, we're very much attracted to it, and that's why we're on the surface. And if there wasn't so much stuff in the way, we'd be flying towards the core. But also, Einstein says that mass doesn't attract itself. The reason for this is actually because it bends space. And so it's a bit like if you put a football on a trampoline. So it would weigh down the space. And if you actually threw another ball on it, then it would gradually circle in towards that ball.
So Newton and Einstein, two of these geniuses that we think of as being like the grandfathers of science, they actually disagreed with each other a little bit there.
Disagreed. It depends on the realm of influence. So for very big stuff, if something is very close to it, then Newton's laws actually break down.
Why do they break down?
Because they aren't 100% accurate in that realm.
If we take his Isaac Newton's law for now as gospel truth, how big does something need to become before it has its own strong gravitational pull?
Well, the gravitational pull doesn't rise exponentially. So when you say it's strong gravitational pull, it goes linearly.
So if we take Isaac Newton's law then as the absolute truth, how big does something need to get before you start to feel its gravitational pull? If all masses have some form of gravity, why are things not flying towards me right now?
Well, that's because you're not quite large enough for things to go flying towards you. So the gravitational force that we feel from the Earth is 1G. If you go on a roller coaster and you're moving very fast, and that increases and you feel that a lot. But if you go on somewhere like the moon, then that's roughly, I think, a tenth of the gravity of the Earth. And so you feel very light.
So it's not that we're lighter on the moon or there's no gravity. It's just that it's so small that we don't notice it.
Yeah, so our mass never changes. Our weight, which is related to the gravity, changes.
Right, it's time to chat all things sciencey in the news this week. A probe in space that has flown around Saturn for 13 years has destroyed itself. The Cassini probe has been orbiting the ring planet, discovering new things all about its atmosphere and its surface, but its mission is over. And instead of bringing it back, because it would be too much trouble, the £3 billion project was ended as the probe Cassini flew to the planet and was torn to pieces when it was burned up in the atmosphere. Also, a photographer has ended a two-year legal fight with an animal rights group over a monkey selfie. Now this, right, is because a monkey stole the camera and took a selfie of itself. Now the group, the animal rights group, has said the photo belongs to the monkey. The photographer naturally disagreed. It's been decided that the cameraman owns the photo, but he has to give a quarter of its profits, 25%, to an animal charity. And we've got some good news to end. The snow leopard is no longer endangered. It's now a vulnerable species, which means it still faces threats from poaching and habitat destruction, but it means we are heading in the right direction at trying to save the species, which is very good. Right, now it's time for our favourite genius at Fun Kids, Professor Hallux, who's telling us why your ears sometimes go pop.
Hallux's Hearing Help Desk. I've got a call.
Hallux Alex's Hearing Help Desk.
Hi, Professor Alex. Why do my ears pop when I go on a plane?
If you've been lucky enough to go on a plane, you'll know that when you're taking off or landing, sometimes your ears can feel rather funny. Your hearing might become muffled, and you might even get a pain inside your ears. Fortunately, once you're up in the air, your ears tend to pop and everything returns to normal. So what's happening? Your middle ear contains trapped air. As you go higher, air around you gets lighter, or as we say, it's at a lower pressure. The trapped air is heavier, or at a higher pressure. This trapped air pushes against your eardrum and can change the way things sound. It can also cause your ear to hurt. You can often get rid of the pressure by swallowing or yawning. This moves air up and down in a little canal called the Eustachian tube that runs between the middle ear and the throat. This helps change the pressure in your ear to match the air around you. Sometimes you can get a similar feeling when you're swimming. The pressure of the water against your eardrum can cause things to sound muffled. Usually, once the water leaves, things go back to normal. However, sometimes it can take a while. Always check with the doctor if you have muffled hearing or if your ears hurt and cannot pop because you could have an ear infection. Time for me to give my ears a pop.
Alex's Hearing Help Desk with support from Phonak. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Alex.
He is our favourite genius over at Fun Kids HQ. We love Professor Hallux. If you do too, you want to hear more from him, you can catch up on all his adventures for free on your phone or tablet. Open up iTunes, get out the Fun Kids app, and you can hear them all over at funkidslive.com. That is it for the Fun Kids Science Weekly then. We are back next week with more answers from the universe's biggest questions. And it reminds me, if you've got a question you want answered, you can always let me know. Just send it over to funkidslive.com, click on Dan's page. I will find it and I'll ask our expert really soon. Also, I'd love you to leave the show a review on the iTunes podcast store. And while you're on there, you can hear all of our brilliant science series. Just search Fun Kids. Or you can get them on the free Fun Kids app as well for your phone or your tablet. And that is one of the many ways that you can hear Fun Kids all around the country. We're also on DAB Digital Radio and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB Digital Radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.